commit. And yeah, so I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. Yeah, it's a big pleasure to be here. Yeah, so I am going to make two presentations. The main topic is, well, you can see it. It's on quantum cohomology of Flagg manifolds. I'm going to address the full Flagg manifolds. Yeah. Well, in the second part, well, I will discuss the main definition and, well, something about generators and relations. Yeah, okay, so let me start with a brief introduction. Well, you will see that everything is related to root systems. So what's the general idea of my presentations? Yeah, well, I guess everyone here knows that somehow if you have a Lie group, then you automatically have a root system, yeah. Well, so well, actually I will assume my Lie group to be well connected, compact. And well, let's call it K. Well, and somehow we can assign to a Lie group a root system, yeah? Okay. Well, in fact, if we assume that K is simply connected, then this correspondence becomes 1-to-1, yeah? Okay. Now I have a compact Lie group, and I can assign to it what is called a Flagg manifold, yeah? Well, a generalized Flagg manifold. And well, what's that? I take K and I mod out maximal torus. Yeah. Well, what can I do with this space? For instance, I can notice this is a well nice topological space, an interesting one actually, and an interesting example in geometry and topology. So I can look at the cohomology ring of this nice space, yeah, cohomology ring. Okay, and I may also notice that this Flagg manifold is actually a projective, complex projective manifold. So it is a projective manifold, and well, smooth projective variety. And well, because of this, I can assign to this space the quantum cohomology what's called the small quantum cohomology ring. I don't want to get into details now. I just want to explain you the main idea. Yeah. And well, what I wanted to point out in this scheme is that to any root system R, I can assign some nice algebraic objects. Yeah. The cohomology ring of the corresponding Flagg manifold, respectively, the quantum cohomology ring of the corresponding Flagg manifold. So yeah, what I am going to do, at least in the first part of my presentation, and mostly in the second part also, so the goal will be to deal with two objects. So I will start with the root system. Yeah, I mean, look at the motivation there. So I start with the root system R, and I'm going to deal with two objects. Well, you will never see in the literature things like that, I mean, notations like that. It's just for, well, for today's talk, for my today's talk, that I will be using that. So what am I going to do exactly about these two objects? So first I'm going to define them. Then I'm going to discuss for both of them about, those are rings, yes? Yeah? So maybe I should tell you from the very beginning, those are rings, yeah? Okay, so I am going to discuss about presentations of these rings, of these two rings in terms of generators and relations. And finally, I'm going to address the following problem. I'm going to describe linear basis. So find linear basis for each of them, and then I'm going to discuss about the structure constants. So find the linear basis and the corresponding structure constant. Yeah. Now the advantage of this approach is, of course, everything will be, actually almost everything will be self-contained. I mean, you don't need to know much more than root systems, even that I'm going to define. So self-contained and accessible, yeah? I mean, normally even an undergraduate student should be able to understand what I'm doing here. The disadvantage is that, well, you will lose connections with the cohomology ring of the generalized Bragg manifold. But anyway, I will try to make these connections more transparent at some point. So yeah. But anyway, so everything will be about, well, root systems. But it's always useful to try to look at the background and try to understand what's actually happening there. There are connections with the cohomology of the flat manifold K mod T. Yeah. But normally it will be self-contained and well, it should be accessible. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, this is the main idea. So I wanted to warn you about what is going to happen here. Good. Now let's start the actual discussion. So I want to talk about root systems. So H star of R of a root system so let me start with an example of a root system. Let me make this picture. I hope almost everyone here guessed what's next. So I am considering a set of vectors in R2. Yeah. So I'm just looking at the vectors. 8 vectors here. Well, alpha, beta, and so on. I want to take 2 of them. Say that I want to take alpha and beta. And what I want to do is consider the following thing. So S sub alpha will always denote, I mean not only here, in general, whenever you have a vector, alpha, S sub alpha will denote reflection. Reflection, more precisely, it will be about, well, a hyperplane. And this hyperplane is the one perpendicular to alpha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but in this case, you see alpha, you see the hyperplane, and I want to take S alpha of beta. Well, so this is beta, and if I take S alpha of beta, so hyperplane perpendicular to alpha, you reflect it, and what you get is this. Okay, now it's easy to see S alpha of beta is in fact beta minus 2 alpha. Yeah. Okay, so let me write it here. It's beta minus 2 alpha. And what I wanted to point out in this story is that what we get here is an integer number. Yeah, this negative 2 alpha is an integer. Okay, and that's an example of a root system. And that's what must happen always for a root system. So what is a root system? I don't want to give you the full list of axioms, but the main idea for a root system is that, what do we have? We have a triple, actually. Yeah, we have a vector space, a scalar product on this vector space, and a certain subset R. So I will write this R. Yeah, so briefly R. What is this R actually? A subset of V. So R is a subset of V, so a finite set of vectors. Yeah, finite set of vectors. I'm just going to mention one property. There are two others. I don't want to spend too much time with that. So the essential, I would say, property is that whenever you take alpha and beta in R, you take, again, S alpha, yeah, the reflection about the hyperplane perpendicular to alpha, you apply it on the vector beta, and, well, everyone knows, yeah, I said undergraduate students should know that. So it's 2 alpha, do I know that? I think I do, yeah, okay, alpha, yeah. Okay, so the point is that the coefficient you get here, well, with or without the minus sign, is an integer number, yeah. Okay, so that's the, actually, I think this is the most important property. There are some other properties here, but I don't want to mention them right now. Okay, so this is a root system. Yeah, we start with something like that. And what else can we do? Well, lots of nice things. Everything we'll do will be about this. But the classical theory of root systems says that, well, we can do the following thing. We can look at the simple root. Yeah, we can look at the simple root. Well, it's, should I? Well, maybe I will just denote the set of simple roots like this. It's a certain subset of R, yeah? Okay. So let me write this here. So R simple. It consists of a finite set of roots, alpha 1, alpha L. Yeah? This is a basis, a linear basis of V. And every root can be written as a linear combination with integer coefficients of those alpha i's. Okay, there is a certain set of positive roots which corresponds to this choice. What else? We can also assign a viel group. Yeah, whenever we have a root system, we also have a viel group. So I'm just looking at the subgroup of transformations of the space V generated by S alpha. Yeah, where alpha is a root, and that's what we call the viel group, and we denote it in this way. Yeah, W like viel. Okay, and in fact, it turns out, that's a fact, you'll have to believe me if you haven't seen that before, that this is generated by the reflections about the simple roots. Yeah, so it is the same as the group generated by S alpha 1, S alpha L. Good, so group generated by. Now let's try to get closer to this goal, define H star of R. I have R and I want to define H star of R. What am I going to do? Well, I'm going to look at polynomial functions on V, yeah? And, that's a ring, of course, yeah? So the ring of polynomial functions on V. So functions f defined on V with values in R, real value functions which are polynomials. Okay, now the Weyl group acts on V, so it will naturally act on the ring of polynomials. Yeah, okay, so now we are ready. We can define the ring H star of R. So what's the definition? So by definition, H star of R is the ring of all polynomials on V divided by the ideal generated by the Weyl invariant polynomials. So we take polynomial functions on V, invariant under W, and well, I have to take polynomials of positive degree, yeah, non-constant polynomials. Okay, and that's the ideal generated by this. Okay, so that's a definition. Yeah? So the superscript indicates invariant, W invariant. Okay. Now, the question is, one question I wanted to address is, of course, this is a ring, yeah? That's a ring, obviously. But I wanted to address more elementary questions. I'm just looking at the linear structure of this ring, and the question is, that's the main definition. So is this ring finite dimensional? And, well, if so, try to find the dimension and find the basis. So try to find the dimension of H star of R, what I denoted by H star of R, and also try to find a basis. Okay, two questions, actually. And how can we get an answer? So is everyone aware of? Maybe not yet. Okay, so I still give you time to look at that. Yeah. Okay, so I will achieve the first goal. Just a second, please. Yeah, so I'm going to describe a basis. It is finite dimensional. Yeah. Okay, so maybe I should use this break. This is the same as the cohomology of the corresponding flag manifold, yeah? So in the previous scheme, I don't know where the scheme is. Oh, it's still here, yeah? So this is the same as the cohomology of this flag manifold, yeah? Okay. But you don't need to understand this. Everything is self-contained. Good. So how can I find the basis of this ring? We have to use some tools here. The tools are the divided difference operators. More precisely, so divided difference operators. So more precisely, I said if you have a root alpha, you can assign to it what's denoted by delta sub alpha. This is an operator which acts, it's an endomorphism of this. What's the precise definition of delta alpha? Delta alpha, you take a polynomial f and you assign to it the following thing. You take f minus f composed with s alpha, yeah? So s alpha acts on v, so you can make this composition, and you divide by something. You divide by a degree 1 polynomial. Which polynomial? Well, you take alpha, which is a vector of v, yeah? And scalar product with alpha. This is a degree 1 polynomial, and you can easily see delta alpha of f, as defined here, is also a polynomial, yeah? I mean, this polynomial divides the other one, and the degree is one less, yeah? So you decrease the polynomial, the degree with one unit. Okay, that's delta alpha. Now, and I said these are important tools. Actually, it's elementary, well, you will have to believe me, but it's really simple. First of all, if you take the ideal of, I factored out here, generated by this, Yeah, of course, well, you may take delta alpha, and the point is that this ideal is delta alpha invariant. Yeah, so delta alpha leaves this ideal invariant. That's easy. Once you, well, learn a bit how to manipulate this delta alpha, this is just some kind of a derivative, actually. Yeah, so it satisfies some kind of a Leibniz rule and so on. So yeah, it's actually elementary, and it's also elementary. Well, once you understand a bit the theory of root systems, that the following polynomial. Okay, so what do we do? We take first of all degree one polynomials. Yeah. Okay, so you take root alpha. And, well, scalar product with alpha. That's a degree one polynomial, yeah? Okay, well, now you want to multiply all those polynomials, yeah? And you let alpha be a positive root. So what I write here is alpha belongs to R sub plus, yeah? Okay, R sub plus. R sub plus is the set of... Oh, sorry. So, is it... can you see? Okay, is it better now? Yeah, so R plus is the set of all positive roots. Yeah. Okay, so I multiply all those degree one polynomials. I get a, well, higher degree polynomial, and I want to denote this by F1. Why is this polynomial important? Because this one is not invariant. This is not invariant, yeah? After you factor this out, the polynomial, at least the polynomial F1, will survive. Yeah? Okay, so it's something very precise, actually. So not only that it survives, but it has a very nice behavior. So if you take F1 and you compose this with S alpha, this is definitely not F1. That's what I told you before. It's something... Oh, sorry. I want to take a simple root, yeah? S alpha I, say. Okay, so you take this, and what you get is not at all F1. You get negative F1, yeah? Okay, so this is not invariant, yeah? So it will survive here in H star of R. You will find it there. Good, but still I haven't given you the answer to this question. I will do that right away. Oops. Yeah, okay, I won't need that example anymore. So once again, I'm looking at the basis, a basis of H star of R, which I said, well, if you've seen these things before, or well, just trust me, is the same as the cohomology ring of the corresponding flag manifold, K mod maximal torus. Okay, but as I said, just look there and try to understand the following statement. This is a theorem. Well, actually, I should, well, the first paper which has to be mentioned is the one by Lisa, is it N or without N? Bernstein or Bernstein, yeah, okay, so yeah, I always have problems. Does it have an N? Ah, okay, sorry. Okay, and there is a, well, I think it's I, Gelfand, yeah, and S, Gelfand. Okay. But in this form, it's been proved by Hiller. I mean, this approach, well, it can be found in a book by Hiller. You probably know this book. I mean, well, some of you do know that red book by Hiller. It's a very nice one. I like it very much. It's written in this spirit, actually. Okay. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So try to understand how do we get the promised basis. So you start with F1, yeah? F1 will survive. I told you that. I hope you believe me. So you take F1, yeah? Okay, at least this one will survive. But then you apply deltas, yeah? You apply deltas. So you apply one delta, and then another delta, and then another delta, and so on, yeah? So successively, yeah? Deltas of this type, yeah? And in fact, you only take deltas corresponding to simple roots. So you take delta, well, whatever. And anyway, so the point is that some of these polynomials, these are just polynomials, yeah? Some of them will survive, some of them will die, they will cancel, but those which survive will give you a basis, the desired basis, yeah? Okay, now let me try to make this statement more precise. So delta, well, alpha ik, because I said I only take simpler roots. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, okay. So delta alpha I2 and so on. So yeah, things like that. And what exactly we do is as follows. We take an element of the Weyl group, yeah? You remember what the Weyl group was? It was on one of these blackboards. We'll probably need 20 blackboards all around the room. Okay, so that's W. You decompose it. Yeah, I said that the Weyl group W, oh, it's still there, yeah? You see, it's generated by those things. So you decompose it in a product of generators. So it's S alpha I1 and so on, S alpha ik, yeah? Okay, you take this decomposition. You make sure that you cannot reduce the length of this decomposition by using the relations. So make sure that this is reduced. Yeah, you cannot use relations in order to shorten it. And, well, and you do that. And you do that, and I have to say that what you obtain here, this is actually the first statement, is independent of the choice of the decomposition. So this is independent of the decomposition. Okay. Yeah, because of course there are several possible decompositions, yeah, all reduced. Okay, and this is the first statement, and the second statement is the answer to our question. Yeah, so the point is that, well, if you take, I mean, because it's independent of the decomposition, this thing depends only on W, of course, yeah, and you, well, can use this notation. So you denote this thing by FW. And the point is that if you take all those FWs, cosets, modulo Weyl invariant polynomials, so cosets in H star of R, and you take them all together, yeah, you get the desired basis. This is a basis of H star of R. Yeah, sorry for this noise. Hopefully you can hear it. Okay, what's the consequence, if you want, the dimension? Yeah, what's the dimension of this, well, H star of R is the same as the order of the Weyl group. Yeah, so it's getting probably boring for many of you because, well, some of you do know these things very well. I will try to get to some more exciting things right away. Yeah, sorry. So the first goal was written here, yeah, it's no longer here, was to define the ring H star of R. The second goal is to get a presentation in terms of generators and relations. Well, it's done by definition, yeah. Well, you may want to think a bit about the generators. Let's think a bit about the generators. Now, well, maybe I should tell you, you only have polynomials of degree at least 2 here. Yeah, that's a fact. So you have to believe that. And because of this, so generators have degree at least 2, well, what you need to get generator set for this ring. Yes, I'm looking here and I'm trying to think a bit about the generators because the relations are already given, yeah, actually. Well, what you need to take are just degree 1 polynomials, yeah? So what you actually need is just a linear basis. When I say generators, I mean generators as a ring, yeah? So this is a ring now. I start thinking of it like a ring. It wasn't the case before. Linear basis of H1 of R, yeah, okay, so, and there is a preferred basis here, that's what I wanted to point out, so what you do is, you remember L was the dimension of V, so what I'm going to take are, well, what I called lambda 1, lambda L, what are those? Well, degree 1 polynomials, yeah, as you may expect. And they are uniquely characterized by well, these are the fundamental weights, yeah, for those of you who know fundamental weights. Lie theory, well, I don't need to write this, but maybe some of you don't, so I would really like to write the equation which characterizes lambda. So, well, it may look strange, but this is the fact which characterizes lambda. Yeah. Okay, so you take alpha I, those are a basis, simple roots, and you have to normalize them somehow, multiply by 2, divide by this number, and these are still a basis, and if you have this, you know what lambda j is. Okay, so let me come back. I want a set of generators, so what I want is a linear basis, and I said that there is a preferred basis. So actually I have to take cosets, because you see, I'm always looking at the quotient ring here. Yeah. Okay, so these are the generators, and you have the relations here, the value-invariant polynomials in the variables lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda l. Okay, so it's still not very exciting for some of you. Okay, so so what did I say? I have three goals. Yeah, the first goal was to find the description in terms of generators and relations. It's here, definition. Yeah, the third goal was, you remember, to find a basis. Well, actually, I did find a basis. You have the basis here, and what we need is what? Let me repeat the third goal for H star of R. Yeah, the third goal was to find. Well, I said to find the structure constants. Yeah, structure constants. So you take FV. You take FW, these are two elements of the basis, yeah? Actually, well, let me come back here. I'm sorry about that. Okay. So this is what I will call the Schubert basis, yeah? Because it's related to the Schubert basis in the cohomology of the generalized Flagg manifold. Anyway, okay, I will take two elements of this basis, yeah? This basis here, it's constructed. It's clear it should be clear what that is. Structure constant, yeah? So I want to decompose this as a linear combination of the elements of the basis. So this can be written, that's for sure, as a linear combination. Well, VWU, the class of FU. And the goal is to find those coefficients. Yeah? Now, the what follows here will be important. So it's a strategy which is going to be used later for the quantum cohomology. So there is a certain approach, a certain strategy which is used in order to find these coefficients. Well, it's a purely theoretical strategy, but it leads to a combinatorial model. So it leads to something which can be done by computers, at least. Okay, so, sorry, I should have, yeah, is it clear to everyone? Yeah, okay. Yeah, so what's the strategy? The strategy is, first of all, you take FW and try to write it as a polynomial in the variables lambda 1, lambda l. Yeah? I said that these are variables. So once again, I hope it's clear to everyone. Once I define the lambdas there, yeah, lambdas, polynomials in V, sorry, polynomial functions on V will become polynomials in the variables lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda l. Yeah, in this sense, FW is a polynomial in variables lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda l, but try to make sure that you know how to write this, yeah? Okay, so suppose that you can do that, and the second point is, so you want to multiply, you see, you want to multiply by FV, yeah, but FV, say, well, if you want FV, okay, FV, yeah? Okay, but FV is a polynomial in variables lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda l. So what you need, the only thing you need is to multiply, how to multiply by lambda I, yeah? So lambda I times FW. So you need to know how to do that, and that's everything. And we do know how to do that, actually. Yeah, there is a nice formula, which says that this is the sum running over positive roots alpha, the sum running over all positive roots alpha with, sorry, I need a new piece of chalk, yeah. In the meantime, maybe some of you will start looking for this formula in your memory. Okay, so there are some coefficients here. So it is 2 alpha mod alpha. Okay, so this is an integer number, so you have to take this and you have to, well, these are the coefficients, and you have some classes, yeah? F sub something, sub what? WF alpha, yeah. Okay, and you have to make sure that you have the, you don't have any problems with the degrees, yeah? So you may, actually you have to take the degree of this to be the same as the degree of FW. Okay, plus one. Well, anyway, so this is known, yeah? And this is what we call, well, this formula has been discovered by Chevalier. And, well, in this form, again, it was proved by Hiller. So you can find a nice proof in this context in Hiller's book. Yeah. Okay. Is it all right? No, because Alex is unhappy with the formula. Okay. Okay, well, some coefficients here. And anyway, it's known. Yeah, it's known. Okay, good. Now I'm trying to get to something more interesting. Even more interesting, yeah? Okay, so I'm going to get to the quantum cohomology ring of a root system R. These are, well, actually, I didn't want to bring too many notations. These are the dual roots, yeah? These are the dual roots. But I don't want to say anything about the dual root system and things like that, so, yeah? Or co-roots or whatever. We don't need that anymore. Okay, let's try to do the same in a different way, of course, for the quantum cohomology of R, yeah, QH star of R. Let's start a new topic, the ring QH star of R. So what are we going to do? First, consider some, well, let me call them extra variables, yeah? Well, I just take some variables, some, well, I don't know. I don't find any word other than variables, L variables, yeah? L is, again, the dimension of the space V, the number of variables of polynomial functions on V, and so on. Good. So, yeah, there is a decisive result here, yeah? That's an interesting one, actually. Well, yeah, I would like to have more insight on this result. Anyway, let me state it. So, Okay, so, the first thing I should say is that this result has been noticed by Peterson, Dale Peterson. Also, Fomin, Gelfand, and Posnikov did something. Well, I mean, they really proved this lemma, but for type A. And I also gave a proof in the general situation. Yeah. So for an arbitrary, I should say this is an irreducible root system. Yeah. But I don't want to. Try to bear that in mind. I mean, for people who know what that is, this will be an irreducible root system. Yeah. Okay. One of the types, A, B, C, up to, yeah, okay. What do I want to say here? I want to consider, an object which may look pretty strange. So I am going to take one of those lambdas, a fundamental weight. So I take this lambda J, say. Okay, and then I'm going to add something to this lambda. Add, a certain sum, and you have lambda j of 2 alpha divided by the length of alpha squared. Yeah. Okay, so these things are somehow important, yeah, from the very beginning anyway. So it's, yeah, you see, I mean, I already have had them here. Okay, these are integer numbers anyway, and I'm going to consider some powers of q here. So I'm going to take q1 to a certain power, and then q2 raised to a certain power, and so on. And the exponents are, well, it looks fairly complicated. Well, anyway, so there are some powers of q here. So q1 to the power of lambda 1, well, 2 alpha over, yeah, well, it may look complicated. And somehow, well, it is, but something marvelous happens with these bad-looking things. So QL to the power of lambda L of, well, 2 alpha over length of alpha squared, yeah? And one more thing you need here, yeah, in order to make things even worse, you put a delta alpha here, yeah? And the sum is running over a certain... I don't have time to get into these details. Certain alpha in R plus, so certain positive root alpha. Now, what's that exactly? You have to look at this as an operator, well, if you want an endomorphism of the following ring. So you take your H star of R, yeah, well, the object which has been defined before, and you add the variables Q1, QL, yeah. I think I should also say that everything here is linear with respect to Q1, Q2, QL, yeah. Okay, so, and these are important things, yeah. Well, I'm going to call them lambda J. And, yeah, okay. These are very extremely important things. Yeah, I mean, they were, well, defined or, well, introduced, considered by Peterson, and I will call them Peterson's operators. Okay, good. Yeah, but that's not a statement. That's just a definition. The statement is, oh, no, I apologize. Sorry. There is one more thing. No. I'm sorry about that. Well, they are also operators on H star R times this, but I want initially, they are operators on, I'm sorry about that, on pol of V, yeah? Polynomials on V, tensor this, yeah? Sorry about that, yeah? So delta alpha X on polynomials, and you have something which is well-defined. I mean, there is no problem with the definition, but there is lots of problem, I mean, there is lots of trouble with the next property, which says that any two such operators commute with each other. Now, that's something which I find amazing. And, okay, so the point is that, well, these polynomials satisfy lambda I times lambda j equals lambda j times lambda I. So any two such operators commute with each other. I mean, it looks awful. Yeah, you have this thing here, but nevertheless, these things commute with each other. Yeah, okay, that's a fact. I mean, you'll have to believe it. I mean, technically, it's been proved. I mean, there is a proof in one of my papers, but, well, I personally do not have too much insight on this thing. I don't really understand why is that so. It's a fact. I mean, you have to believe it. It's been proved rigorously and so on. Okay, good. Now, personally, I found this marvelous. Yeah, I mean, okay. Good. So pay attention. I only have polynomials here. Yeah? It's not cohomology. Okay. Actually, I put here H star just to show you that it's not only on H star. It's on pol of V. So good. Okay. Now there is one more thing which I wanted to consider in this lemma to state in this lemma. Yeah. So I have this thing here. I've already considered it. I have the operators lambda I, capital lambda I on this thing, and I want to consider the map which is denoted by psi, psi or psi. Well, doesn't matter. You see it there. Okay. So f of you have a polynomial. Yeah, polynomial in variables lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda L. So I warned you about that. Polynomials on V are polynomials in the variables lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda L. Now you add the Q's here, Q1, Q2, QL. Okay, and what is, well, okay, I will go for psi. Okay, so psi of this is, yeah, and that's also a bit, well, tricky. But, well, so you replace the first variables by the operators, capital lambda, yeah? So lambda 1 is formally replaced by capital lambda 1, lambda 2 by capital lambda 2, lambda n by, sorry, L by capital lambda L. You don't do anything with the last variables, Q1, Q2, QL. And this is just an operator, yeah? This is just an operator. You want to come back to polynomials. What do you do? Well, you just apply this operator. Whoops, how could I, yeah, okay. You apply it on the unit one, yeah? There is a certain unit one, which is coming from H star, and you have this map psi, and it's not difficult. I mean, the second point is not difficult. I want to say that psi is bijective. So psi is, well, psi is bijective. And, well, maybe I should also say it is linear with respect to Q1, Q2, QL. So it is R of Q1, Q2, QL linear. Okay. But that's really not difficult. I mean, it's a simple fact. The hard thing here is point A. Good. So that's a lemma. Now, that's the crucial point, actually. That's the decisive fact. I started with it, and from here on, we can make a nice theory. We can define the, well, let's call it quantum product or whatever, a product. Yeah, I'm going to define it right away. So we can define in a very natural way the product first on polynomials, and then we are going to mod out while invariant polynomials, and we'll get a product on the actual cohomology. Okay, so I have capital lambda, Peterson operators, and psi, which is bijective. There is psi inverse in particular, yeah? Okay. So, well, some kind of a quantum product or a product star. Well, it doesn't really matter. Now, yeah, first of all, you can define the product on polynomials times R of Q1, Q2, QL. What exactly you do? Well, you take two polynomials, and what you assign to them is what? Well, psi inverse of F, psi inverse of G. You multiply those in the usual sense, of course, yeah, and then you use psi. Okay, that's a, well, definition. And, well, that's not really exciting. I mean, I don't think this could lead to anything interesting, but it's getting really interesting after you mod out the while invariant polynomials, yeah? So you can replace pol V by this, yeah? You mod out the while invariant polynomials, and you will get a product on H star of R, tensor R of, okay, let me go for this notation. I think it's shorter, yeah? Instead of Q1, QL, I will just write this. And what do I do? Well, it's very simple. I take the coset of a polynomial F, the coset of a polynomial G in this H star, and what do? Is, well, very simple, F star G. And, of course, we have to make sure that this is well-defined, yeah? This is well-defined. I mean, you take some cosets and you may get some troubles with the representative. Well, you don't. This is well-defined. Well, okay, so believe me, it's really simple. Yeah, that's not a problem. That's not difficult. Good. What do we get? Is a ring. I promised you at the beginning I will define QH star of R. By definition, this is H star of R times R of QI. Okay, and you equip it with the product star. Yeah, we have two stars here, one star here, one star here. They are two different things. I hope it's not confusing. Okay, so that's the, well, I would prefer, I'd like to call it the combinatorial quantum cohomology ring assigned to the root system R. Yeah. Okay, now, that's the definition. The second problem, I said, it will be a presentation in terms of generators and relations. So how can we do that? So in the title I mentioned two goals, yeah? Generators and, definition and generators and relations. So we have the definition. Let's discuss about the relations. I still have about 7 minutes left. So let me tell you about the generators. Somehow I don't really like this, but I have to do that pretty often. Yeah, sometimes I say it's not difficult. Yeah, it's not difficult to do that or this or something like that. It's really also not difficult to see that the generators of this ring is, I mean, the point is that if you just take H star of R, the generators are, well, with the usual product. Yeah, I mentioned that the generators are just lambda, lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda L. Well, here you have the same generators, lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda L, with the extra generators Q1, Q2, QL. Yeah, I mean, it's not totally obvious, but it's also not hard to prove that. So. Well, you will have to believe me that the generators of this ring are, first you take the generators of the first component, the classical component, if you want, H star of R, and you add the Qs, Q1, Q2, QL. Okay, so that's a fact. Good. The really difficult thing, now that's difficult, yeah, is to find the relations. Okay, relations. How do we find the relations? Well, forget about the combinatorial quantum product. I'm going to state a more general result. So forget about the combinatorial quantum product. Yeah, I'm going to discuss about this shortly. Sure, yeah, we have. The grading is important here, actually. I should have mentioned it at the beginning, but, well, it's not too late now. Yeah. So, well, I will call them, well, some obvious properties. Obvious properties of a star. Well, by some reason, I will prefer to write the properties here. You will understand immediately why. So, there won't be any teaching evaluations at the end, I hope. Okay, the first property is, well, that's my definition, actually. The product, I said you have to forget about star. No, don't forget about it yet. So some properties of the combinatorial quantum product. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, so by definition, this is RQI linear, or bilinear, if you want, yeah? So we have an RQI algebra, actually, yeah? That's a definition, actually, so there's nothing to comment on this. It is associative. Well, easy to see that. Commutative. It is, the third property, that was 3, 4. If you take F and G homogeneous, F and G are homogeneous here, yeah? And you look at the degree of this, this must be the same as the degree of F plus the degree of G. So G are homogeneous here. And there is something important here, and here comes the grading story. You have to make the right choice for the degree of QI. Yeah, you assign the degree of QI to be 2. Okay, so I still have about 5 minutes left. That's also not difficult. Another thing is, well, if you take F and you take G, and you formally replace qi by zero, all qi replaced by zero. Well, what you get is the usual product, f times g. So we say that the product star is a deformation of the usual product, yeah. Okay, the sixth property, well, that's already a bit, the last two properties are a bit technical. Okay, let me write six here. You have something, I have to write it. It's very technical. It's a certain relation which is satisfied by the property, by the product star. Okay, so you have lambda I star lambda j. Okay, so this must be the same as, so you know exactly what this is, yeah? It can be proved. Okay. So all ij's and all i's here. Well, okay, ij from 1 to l, I from 1 to L. Good. And number 7, the seventh property, that one is, well, maybe the most, not very good looking, but simple to prove. It's very simple to prove this for the quantum product. So you have two indices, I and J, yeah? And you look at this expression. So you have I and J here. The point is that this is symmetric in I and J. Symmetric in I and J. So if you replace I by J here, you get the same thing. That's what I mean. Yeah, so those are properties which can be easily checked. So, well, trust me, it's really easy. Even the last one, it looks complicated, but once you look at the capital lambda, you will realize that. Well, I'm somehow running out of time. I don't want to say how to prove that. Okay, so these are some properties. Generators, well, we already have the generators, but we don't have the relations. Yeah, and now I will get back to what I said. So forget about the combinatorial quantum product. Yeah. So I have a general result, which says that if a product satisfies these axioms, then it has a certain presentation. Yeah, generators and certain relations. So this is the final result I'm going to mention now. This is a theorem which initially it was proved by Boomsey Kim. In this form, it was proved by myself. So what's the claim? Take any product. Star is any product with the properties star 1, star 7. Then the ring H star of R, enlarged with variables QI, equipped with the product star, has a certain presentation. So it is isomorphic to the ring generated by, I said here, always the case, I mean, that's always the case, generated by lambda 1, lambda L, Q1, QL. And you mod out certain relations. Well, I don't have time to say anything about those relations. I'm just going to say toda relations, whatever this means. I definitely don't have time to say anything about that, but these are the relations, yeah, certain relations. We should not depend on star, of course, yeah. Okay, so I still have 3 minutes. I wanted to say just a few words about the proof, okay, so I hope in the meantime everyone knows where Sid Smith is. I wanted to say just a few words about the proof. 2 minutes. Okay, so the proof. Main ideas, of course. And then, so there are a few steps in the proof. The first thing, well, that's something classical. Yeah, it's just a matter of notation if you want. You take violin-variant polynomials, and it's a classical fact that this is generated by some, well, nice homogeneous polynomials. It is generated by, well, L pieces, yeah, L polynomials, always the same L. And, well, maybe I should also say that U1 is, well, something which has been written there in a certain form. So U1 has degree 2, yeah, the degree 2 generator. Yeah, well, I will write it. So alpha I, alpha j, length of alpha I squared, length of alpha j squared, and you have lambda I, lambda j. So that's a degree 2 polynomial, yeah? And there are some other generators, U2, UL. Good. Now, for the last two steps, yeah, I can do that, Megumi. Oops. Huh? Am I going to stop it? Oops. Oh, it stops by itself. Okay, good. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the other two steps. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I made some copies. So if you took notes, I can give you copies of this. So yeah, second step. Well, there are some differential operators which have to be considered here. Well, that's what they look, yeah? So the variables are QI, and you have some derivatives, partial derivatives with respect to QI, so it's still undergraduate level. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you exactly how to find those DJs. So you know exactly what D1 is. These are important tools in the proof, yeah? So I'm still discussing about the proof of my theory. We use those differential operators. So I'm going to tell you exactly how to get them. You know what D1 is, and you know what the others are, not precisely, yeah, not exactly. So you just know that they are uniquely determined by some properties. First, they satisfy a certain homogeneity property, and you have to pay attention to the grading here. The second property is this one here. So somehow the principal part of the differential operator DJ is just UJ, yeah? Principal part means that you cancel, well, variables, and, well, you have some H here, but somehow, well, that's roughly the idea. And there is a third property, namely that DJ commutes with D1. So DJ, I'm telling you, it is uniquely determined by these three properties, yeah? It's hard to get it explicitly, but it exists, and it's determined by this. Now, what you do, So you have to prove this equation. I will get back to this story in the afternoon, so that's why I wanted to get here. So you have to prove this. I mean, you can prove this. I mean, the axioms I mentioned over there, so star 1 to star 7, for an arbitrary product, imply this equality. Yeah, I mean, that's, well, what happens here. And then, well, you need relations. You need the Toda relations. How do you get the Toda relations? Well, it's very simple. You just make H equal 0 here, so you get rid of this, you get rid of this, yeah? And you are left with a nice relation which only depends on QI and lambda I, yeah? So, and that's the desired Toda relation, yeah? Okay, and that's how you prove the relations. Of course, DJ does not depend on the product star, yeah? So DJ are coming from, well, from somewhere, from the, I don't know, I don't want to say too much about that. So it's something related to Toda lattice and the quantum Toda lattice and so on. But it's not important. I mean, I think I told you everything you need to know in this sense. Yeah. Okay, and this is the end of the first part. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I would like to finish here.